Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm joined by attorney David Shistokas, the author of Constitutional Soundbites, and what else?
Creating the Declaration of Independence.
Speaking of the Constitution, David, Eileen O'Neill Burke, the Democratic candidate for Cook County State's Attorney, is proposing to create a unit that she says will help protect what the pro-abortion community calls reproductive freedom. But the plan goes after pro-life activist.
That's how I view what her proposal is. Her proposal is to create within the state's attorney's office a unit called, by her terms, the Choice Protection Unit. And, you know, the state's attorney's office has a variety of units in it. There's the felony review unit. There's the drug unit. There's the gangs unit. There's financial crimes. All these units are actually designed to provide education and information for prosecutors to become professional when it comes to prosecuting particular types of crimes. The state's attorney's office is not in charge of protecting anything. In particular, they prosecute crimes. And so in my mind, I've renamed her Choice Protection Unit to be the First Amendment Prosecutions Unit.
She's going after free speech.
She's going after free speech. Free speech, possibly, potentially freedom of religion, any number of things, because she's intending to prosecute people, not necessarily based on their conduct, but based on the content of their message.
And who determines if the content is, in their view, incorrect?
Apparently, Ms. Burke, if the good people of Cook County determine that they're going to elect her.
Well, she's a Democrat in Cook County. Looks like she's going to win, right?
I would take issue with that. I will tell you that there's this tremendous movement in the black community, among the black community, to turn Chicago red. There's a variety of folks that I've been working with in that regard.
Republican Robert Fioretti is running against her. What position does he hold about this unit?
He's aghast at the thought of creating such a unit where the actual goal of the unit is to deter and suppress the exercise of constitutional rights. On her website, the Choice Protection Unit, it's the only thing there. There's nothing about the 1,200 people that have been shot this year, or the 400 folks that have already been murdered in Chicago, or the fact that there are food and pharmacy deserts because there's no prosecutions of retail theft. No, it's Choice Protection because she wants to assist in making Illinois a mecca for abortions.
Well, you have ties to Mr. Fioretti. What are those?
I know Bob. I've known Bob for I don't know how long. We've never had professional ties before, but when I saw what was happening, I gave him a call and I asked him what I could do to help out. And I've been doing a variety of things on the campaign. I've been acting as a surrogate. I'm a former assistant state's attorney. Bob has historically in his career been a civil rights attorney. And so I've been kind of a consultant on the operation of the state's attorney's office as well.
He's never been what I would call a super pro-lifer by any means. But even he thinks this proposal that Ms. Burke is calling for, the creation of this pro-abortion unit, is beyond the pale.
Absolutely, that there is no duty of the state's attorney to, in fact, go out and affirmatively protect any particular set of citizens from any particular other set of citizens. The affirmative duty is to prosecute crimes that are brought to the office by law enforcement. And so, like I said, every other unit that's established is to create professionalism in the prosecution of particular types of crimes. So if you establish a unit, that's what that's for. And the only crimes that are outlined in her proposal on this are, in fact, crimes that are the exercise of the First Amendment. But she puts together a thing where they will say that they will have a series of legal treatises to where they might even be in a position to charge people who are demonstrating affirmatively for pro-life activities with terrorism. That's on her website. She talks about terrorism as a potential charge.
If you stand outside with maybe a sign, maybe you're praying outside an abortion center, you could be charged with terrorism?
Under the proposal on her website, terrorism is among the charges that's listed there. It goes from misdemeanor ordinance violations, which, by the way, the state's attorney's office has no authority to prosecute. They can only, the cities and municipalities can prosecute those, to terrorism. they will create a circumstance where they have the ability to throw the book, if you will, at people who are exercising their rights to provide a message with which Ms. Burke disagrees.
Is she going after people who would block the entrance to an abortion center? Is that who she's after?
She doesn't define it that way. It's broadly defined, and she says any crime, you know, all possible. She says all possible crimes that are possible. She doesn't give definition to particular interference with anybody's particular rights. And of course, if in fact somebody does physically interfere with someone else in going about whatever business they're legally going about, that's a crime. But to have a unit that's dedicated to that and then put together a series of possible charges, let's say somebody does interfere with somebody that's on their way into an abortion clinic and perhaps interferes inappropriately. Now they're going to have a book that says, okay, what else can we charge them with? Not just perhaps interference, not just perhaps trespassing, but rather what else can we charge them with? It's crazy.
Well, I read a little bit about this and even noise violations.
Yes.
Tell us.
You know, obviously, if folks have bullhorns and other kinds of things that are outside the allowed ordinances, those are on the list. Which, by the way, again, those are ordinance violations that do not fall within the authority of the state's attorney's office. But yet she's going to train her people about that so that we're going to find something to charge these people with.
It would seem like what she's up to is, one, she's catering to the pro-abortion left.
Yes.
But she also is trying to say to pro-life activists, you better not come outside and express your point of view against abortion because we could come after you. It's the chilling effect again.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what the point of having this proposal out there is, to chill the exercise of people's rights. And that's not the state's attorney's call. The state's attorney's call is not to chill people's rights. The state's attorney's call is, in fact, to enforce the law based on cases that are brought into the office. You don't go out and look for things and then find new charges in the courtroom when they show up.
Well, you know, last year there was legislation to go after pregnancy care centers if they supposedly gave disinformation or misinformation. Is she going to make an attempt to go after pregnancy care centers as well?
That's not within the proposal that's on her website. Okay,
you can't rule it out.
You can't rule it out because I presume that in theory that would be, at least in the mindset that she's expressed by creating this choice protection unit, within that mindset, I would say that there's the possibility of prosecuting people that are providing other information. And who gets to decide what's mis or dis?
Apparently they do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Apparently the left does get to decide that now. Well, this is troublesome. This is a constitutional question, obviously.
Yes.
And you've touched on that. And I'm surprised there isn't a bigger uproar about this.
You know, it was in the short aftermath or right around during the course of the primary campaign in the spring that she made the proposal and it became part of her website and essentially part of her campaign. And of course, this is a presidential election year. The whole thing with Mr. Biden and Ms. Harris and all that sucks up a lot of the air. Her acceptance when she finally, when it was finally determined that she was the primary winner nominee, she said, you know, it would be a mistake to consider me to be somebody that's going to be tough on crime. Please do not think that I'm going to be tough on crime.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. She apparently was...
Well, it seems like Chicagoans who are faced with rising crime would want a state's attorney who would be tough on crime.
Just simply, you don't necessarily have to be tough. You can just simply enforce the law that exists. And so that's the kind of law enforcement that creates food deserts and creates pharmacy deserts where people can't get services.
Bob Fioretti enforced the law.
That's the very first item under issues on Bob's website is enforce the law as written. And that's all anybody can ask is to, you know, that you equally and handily enforce the law as written.
Do you think Ms. Burke believes that abortion is her path to victory? It would sure seem that way.
It would sure seem that way. That seems to be, you know, of course, a part of the general Democratic playbook that no matter what other issues are going on, they seem to think that the marginal voters that they need to put them over the top are in the pro-abortion community.
I'm trying to get my head around this unit and how you could potentially wind up in jail if you're a pro-life activist. Let's say you're beyond the bounds of the so-called bubble zone.
Yes.
And you're praying, holding up a sign. Maybe you have someone who's on one of those handheld bullhorns. Could you go to jail for that?
Depends who has the tape measure, Monty. You know, who has the tape measure and says you're outside the, whatever, the 50, 100-foot zone. It depends on the municipality. They've created these, as you say, bubble zones that have people that are supposed to be certain distances away. And, of course, the same thing about that has to do with, like you said, the bullhorns. And those are usually set at ordinance, general ordinance violations regarding decibel levels. None of it is supposed to be related to content. Okay?
Okay,
it's all supposed to be related to conduct, not content. But I again call your attention to, she's got it on her list of having her office enforce municipal ordinances. The state attorney's office doesn't have the authority to do that. The corporation council has the authority to enforce those things. And those are actually are not jailable. They're only by a fine.
Well, who's going to stop her from doing this in Cook County, with Democrats in control of the legislature and the governor's office and the Illinois Attorney General? Are they going to stop her?
First way to stop her is, if I may, to fear ready for cook.com. Second place we can hope is, even though you don't get to be a judge in Cook County without kissing Democrat rings, and but you would like to think that there's going to be judges that are going to find it within their soul that there's a constitution that they're still in charge of enforcing, and would properly dismiss any number of these things on constitutional grounds.
Yeah, let's say a case is brought against some pro-life activists. Would it stand up in any court?
Well, it certainly is going to wind up, for the reasons we talked about, unfortunately, it's largely going to stand up in a original Cook County court, because for the most part, you know, while we like to think that guys in the judiciary, you know, that's an interesting problem at any rate. You'd like to think that they're going to evenly handedly enforce the law as well. But
Who knows?
In which case, then it winds up in the Illinois Appellate Court, in which case, unfortunately, it winds up in the Illinois Supreme Court. In which case, after that, it gets to the United States Supreme Court, in which case, you know, there would be an opportunity there. But by then, it's, I don't know, you probably had a some sort of felony charge that possibly might carry you 1 to 3 years and maybe up to a $5,000 fine, and you will have spent millions of dollars to get to the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
So it's this whole process, having the unit exist, is to deter the expression of First Amendment activity.
It's going after the pro-life community.
Yes, directly.
Directly. They're trying their best to shut them down because maybe their message is getting through to the public. Attorney David Shostokas, our guest here on Illinois Family Spotlight. We're going to continue our conversation right after this. I want to get to Constitution and Kamala Harris after this.
Homology, evidence of common ancestry? This is Ken Ham, editor of the apologetic series of books, The New Answers Books. There's no doubt there are many similarities among living things. Now, this is called homology, and it's often used as evidence of evolution. But just because something is similar doesn't mean that it had a common ancestor. We all use similar designs, like with a bicycle and a motorcycle, but this doesn't mean they share a common ancestor. They're similar because they are designed for the same purpose and to function in a similar environment. As we show in our Creation Museum, it's the same in the living world. Living things were all made by a common designer to live in the same world and perform the same basic purposes. So it's no surprise that God used a similar design.
There's so much more to discover when you visit our website at AnswersRadio.com. Listen to this program again, view a transcript, or share this with others at AnswersRadio.com.
The Great COVID Con, an Illinois Family Institute forum. What went wrong and why? 7 p.m. Friday, October 18th at Families of Faith Church, Shanahan. To RSVP, call 708 708- 781-9328.
Medicine very often is not being scientific. Turns out when we're scientific, things go well.
Join IFI, Dr. William Crevier, and Dr. Mark Zumhagen on how to keep the great COVID con from happening again.
Big Pharma has its own agenda. It's not giving us science, and it's not giving us the truth.
The Great COVID Con, a special Illinois Family Institute forum, 7 p.m. Friday, October 18th at Families of Faith Church, Shanahan. To RSVP, call 708-781-9328, 708-781-9328.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lurick here along with attorney David Shostokas. And David, the author of Constitutional Soundbites. And speaking of the Constitution, what view do you think Kamala Harris has on the Constitution? Is it a living Constitution? Or is she a type of person who would suggest that, we don't have to abide by that?
I think she'd probably go along with Mr. Biden, who has, in fact, been told three times he doesn't have authority to grant relief to college loans. The Supreme Court has told him three times there is no such authority, and each time he says, "Okay, well, I'm going to find another way to do this." No, the Constitution is kind of like an inconvenience for these folks. Certainly. The Constitution regarding achieving the consent of the governed, I think she demonstrated how little that means to her when they just threw Mr. Biden out, who had the 14 million votes and delegates himself to become the nominee.
What's a primary?
Yeah, what's an actual election? Yeah, what's an actual election that you held, regardless of what you did to keep Mr. Kennedy out of the election and what the other things you did. But that's all a separate issue. But that demonstrates how malleable rules are to Ms. Harris and her colleagues, if you will. And what's the Constitution? The Constitution is the ultimate rule. And so, no, she didn't. I don't think she'd find any boundaries in the Constitution.
Well, we talked about this pro-abortion unit that Democratic candidate for Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke wants to create. But Kamala Harris has a record on abortion, too. She's very pro-abortion.
Yes.
And as California Attorney General, she went after pregnancy care centers and undercover pro-life investigator David DeLeiden.
Yes, no question about it. And certainly what I remember the DeLeiden matter, he certainly was exercising First Amendment rights in the conduct of what he's doing. And apparently that is an ongoing thing where they've actually destroyed the man's life, you know. And so and Harris is clearly responsible for that. But, you know, in the debates recently, again, on the abortion matter, asked her about that. And she said she would sign, if it came to her desk, legislation that would instill Roe versus Wade as a national legislation. I would remind her that the Dobbs decision of the court says it's not the purview of the federal government to be involved in this. It doesn't matter that it's just not the federal courts. That would also mean the Congress doesn't have the authority to legislate what she proposes, the bill that she would sign. That bill would be unconstitutional on its face. But that is, of course, of no concern to her.
Well, especially if we have more justices on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Which she wants.
Yeah, she wants some more justices, and if they replace them, then of course we don't have a court. We don't have a court anymore. But that's it. If you're asking what her fealty to the Constitution is, the proper answer, the proper response to, would you sign a national bill that restores the principles of Roe versus Wade across the country? The proper answer is the Supreme Court has said this is not the purview of the federal government. And they said it, and it's a constitutional issue. And it doesn't fall within Article 1, Section 8, among the powers of the Constitution to regulate abortion.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It was those Trump Supreme Court nominees that pushed that through. We need to get around that.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly right. That's getting around. The Constitution is actually an inconvenience for these folks. And it, you know what? It's supposed to be. The Constitution is supposed to be an inconvenience. It's supposed to restrict and limit government. It's supposed to be a government of limited powers and limited authority. And then pursuant to the 10th Amendment, what's ever not granted in Article 1, Section 8, belongs to the states. And Wickard versus Filburn in 1944, we can, you know, that's a whole other problem.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but we won't in this edition of Spotlight. You know, we're hearing a lot from Kamala, her record as a prosecutor in California. You know, we heard that during the debate.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a checkered history as a prosecutor in California.
Well, it is. And, you know, strangely enough, after the first time I heard her say that, as she's taking this pride in prosecuting these transnational gangs and other things, drugs and trafficking across the border and whatnot, I actually said, geez, I'm going to look to see if I can find a case, to see if I can find even one case that involves a transnational gang or that she brought as the Attorney General of the state of California. I didn't find a single case. I found a particular document of all the things that the California legislature should pass in regard to these laws that came out of her office while she was there. I didn't find one case where she actually prosecuted a transnational gang. There was actually a case that was brought by her office as the Attorney General of the state of California.
Let's turn our attention to the election. And a lot of Republicans are very concerned about election integrity. Are we closer to having a fair election this time out than 4 years ago?
I like to think so. I've been part and parcel of a conference with a few weeks ago with the Republican National Lawyers Association. And for the first time in my memory, the RNLA and the NRCC, the Republican Congressional Committee, and the NRSC, the Senatorial Committee, and the RNC are all coordinating their legal efforts together. And they're doing a number of things proactive primarily in the swing states to protect our elections. In my experience, of course, I did work for Trump and Rubio in Florida in 2016, and I was with Mayor Giuliani and that team in Pennsylvania in 2020. They are being more proactive this time about doing things to protect the elections ahead of time. It's so very difficult to do things afterwards, to challenge things afterwards, but to be proactive in advance in terms of doing things like monitoring the mail processing centers. The mail processing centers are just incredible. Of course, there was a time when we were worrying about having poll watchers and somebody would go after a precinct and there'd be 500-600 people possibly could vote in a precinct, right? But now you have hundreds of thousands of ballots all coming into one location, largely in the charge of, half a dozen people. So it doesn't take a huge conspiracy to have a massive effect.
What are Republicans doing about that in those mail centers?
We are actively putting together a team to do these things in Chicago and in Cook County. There's two processing centers in Cook County. One is in Cicero and one is in the city on Pulaski. And each candidate is actually entitled to have an observer. They have sets of judges within there, and you're entitled to have an observer for every judge. And we've actually...
Was that happening in the swing states?
Where my heart lies and where... It's been a situation regarding Pennsylvania. I've been invited to go and participate in such things in Arizona. But I think that I can have more impact by trying to take my experiences around the country and put them to work here. But some of the things that I'm talking about that we're putting into motion here are the same things. When I walked into in Pittsburgh, in Allegheny County in 2020, we walked into the 40,000 square foot processing facility and literally walked in blind and had no idea that we were walking into a place where there was maybe a 40 by 40 foot kind of corral where people were processing things in 40,000 square feet, some 200-400 feet away from us and whatnot. And it took us maybe 3 or 4 days to understand precisely what the problems were. Now, in advance, in seven jurisdictions, five particular swing states and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, these things are being prepared for in advance rather than walking in on the day that the processing starts. And that can make a whole lot of difference when you're when you can be ready to go to court right when it starts, as opposed to be ready to go to court 4 or 5 days in and you've already lost several hundred thousand votes.
I'm among a lot of people who believe that, yeah, there was a lot of election fraud in the 2020 election.
It was stolen.
Yeah.
I was there. I watched it. I can tell you.
But the other part is they made cheating legal. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean.
And so they can say, no, it wasn't election fraud. This was legal.
Yeah.
Tell me something that they did, let's say in 2020, or maybe they're trying to do here in 2024, to make that kind of thing legal.
I was most familiar with Pennsylvania, actually, because I worked there from mid-October till Thanksgiving. In the actual aftermath, before Thanksgiving, I testified before the Pennsylvania Senate. And daily, Pennsylvania Supreme Court would send out new directives. And among the new directives were to not pay any attention to postmarks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. You don't have to have two people verify signatures. You only have to have one person verify a signature. Those kind of rules were coming out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court day in and day out. They were just rewriting the election code of the state of Pennsylvania. And frankly, that's utterly illegal because the Constitution gives the state legislatures the authority to generate election law, the time, place, and manner of elections. There is no authority of the courts to overrule those kinds of technical aspects. But of course, they're tossing around COVID and saying they can do stuff because of COVID. And so day in and day out, they were changing the rules in Pennsylvania. It was almost impossible to keep up with the different directives from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And that was going to be turned out to be a huge disappointment by the United States Supreme Court, because ultimately that kind of taking charge of the electoral process by the judiciary was what was at issue in a case called Texas versus Pennsylvania. And the Supreme Court determined that Texas didn't have standing to sue Pennsylvania for not following the Constitution, which is just obscene, because when there's a disagreement among states, there is only one place to have original jurisdiction, and that is the United States Supreme Court. In which case, when the Supreme Court said Texas didn't have standing, the only thing left to happen would be to send the Texas Rangers to duke it out with the Pennsylvania State Troopers. The Supreme Court let us down on that situation.
All right. Once again, the books are?
Creating the Declaration of Independence.
And constitutional
sound bites.
And people can buy them on
Amazon? Both at Amazon. Some of the other bookstores have them available. I do know that Barnes & Noble also has it.
David, September 17th is Constitution Day. How do we live out the Constitution beyond that date?
We have to live it daily. You know, we have to live it daily. I think certainly this audience is used to living by rules that come from on high, rules that come from God. Certainly there's reason to believe that there was some inspiration in the room when they did that. So I would expect that we need to respect the Constitution. You need to study it. You need to buy my books.
Well, there's a plug.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of people of faith who value their freedom of religion. Constitution is a big thing, and we need to be more aware of what's in there and how it protects us and our right to express our faith beyond the four walls of a church.
Yeah, the principle of the Constitution is not that it protects us. The principle of the Constitution is that these rights are given by God in the first place, and it's government's duty to see to it that we can exercise them. The Constitution doesn't create any rights. The Constitution acknowledges the rights that we personally have just simply by being alive, by being children of God.
Thank you so much. Attorney David Shostokas, God bless you and all the work you do. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. Be sure to go to our events page at IllinoisFamily.org. Just click events. If you'd like to donate to IFI, you can donate at IllinoisFamily.org. Oh, and remember, folks, get your free copies of our nonpartisan voter guide. You can do that by going to IllinoisFamily.org or give us a call at 708-781-9328. And tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.